God sucks as a parent.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like singing a Fiona Apple tune.
No, but it was like I watched the documentary and I remember thinking, because I was that guy that thought it was like pot was fucking terrible. I grew up thinking pot was the devil. You should never smoke it. It's worse than booze. I'd watch my parents get wasted when I was a kid at fucking parties. I mean, and I remember before I started using cannabis, because I replaced all of my alcohol consumption with it in the last 3 years. All of it. I don't drink anymore. And I remember thinking, listen, I drink. I have enough going on in my life. I've got enough vices. I don't need to have another one. Yeah. And it's not only not a vice. It's a medical component for people. To think about how we were lied to get to that point drives me crazy still.
Well, when you're, especially what you're seeing now with psychedelics for traumatic brain injury and everything coming to the forefront, right? It was like marijuana. Yeah. They knew, some people were clever enough to know that was the gatekeeper to open up everything else to being looked at differently. And you're seeing it now. I mean, the therapeutics with marijuana for some people, I always preface this because it's not, you'll also get the hippies that'll say it's the cure all for cancer and everything too, which that's not true either. Right. But it's, you know, we are seeing
every time we talk about weed on the air, we get a weed cures cancer.
Rick Simpson oil.
Here's the thing. So we interview those people, right? And even interview the oncologists and stuff like that. Yeah. And said, look, one of the first things I prescribe to my cancer patients is cannabis for treatment, because what a lot of people don't realize is it isn't necessarily the cancer treatment that's always the killer for a lot of people. It's the medication you take to like prevent or supposed to help you or to help you
and deal the effects with of treatment, it.
Chemo and radiation, right?
Right.
And this is where they're seeing a non-toxic, or the LD50 of cannabis is off the charts, right? They've injected mice with amounts that they thought would have killed humans, and it doesn't kill them. Sure, they're tripping balls for 3 or 4 days, but they don't die, right? Like the LD50, mean lethal dose among 50 people for cannabis is off the charts, right? It's really hard to, and yes, when you look at cancer, like, look, when they'll say, look, these cancer cells shrank, the one guy says in the culture, he's like, well, yeah, I can put cancer cells in a dish and I could pour, you know, dish soap on it and they'll die too, right? That doesn't mean it cures all forms of cancer. But any good doctor that's actually really taking the time to educate them with cannabis will always tell you, do both, right?
Yeah.
Right? Do the cannabis treatment on your own. If you like the oils or therapeutics or edibles or whatever to deal with the pain, the nausea, the chemo, the appetite, absolutely. But do not discount the traditional treatment too, right? Do not just shun, because like, yes, we are lied to. Doesn't mean everything in the medical world has been false, right? You had some, like almost everything in life, you had some nefarious business people that disinfected their business. So they made sure they manipulated things to hear what you wanted to hear on the cannabis side.
Big pharma.
But, you know,
and cannabis. Yep.
Big pharma. But there's also a lot of good things that comes. Like there's, you know, my mom just went through cancer treatment and she's in remission. Like the cancer treatment does work, right? It doesn't, that doesn't work. So, and the same with cannabis treatment. There's some great results of it helping a lot of people. But we knew when we went through this, there's even the girl that was in Charlotte Figge, that was in the Charlotte's Web documentary.
Yeah.
She passed away this last year. Right. So cannabis doesn't heal everything. Can it be a great ailment or treatment for many things? Absolutely. But is it the wonder drug that heals everything? That is just as bad as the narrative of the propaganda that was pushed by pharmaceutical, you know, prison form. They're equally as bad. And I think that's why both those documentaries turned out well, is that we were not activists trying to make a point. We were just filmmakers trying to make a great film, right? So that's why I think out of all the cannabis films, The Union and The Culture, I resonate as the two that really connected, you know, really well, because we went into it like you guys. I was really not saying against, but I thought all the same things. Like, it makes you stupid, makes you lazy. It's far more harmful than booze.
Gives you man tits.
Yeah.
Decreases your erection. All those things. Yeah. Listen, as a user of that substance, I can tell you none of it's true.
Yeah. Well, and I can also add that at the age of 13, I ate a plate of brownies and slept for 3 days, and I'm fine.
That's the thing. So, and it's different too when you eat brownie. And whenever you eat it, it becomes 11-hydroxy THC, because it goes through your kidneys and liver, and that's when you can have the overdose. You can overdose when you eat it, but the overdose doesn't kill you like other drugs. It'll just either make you sleep or you'll be paranoid for a long time, right? It can last for 3 or 4 days.
Everybody said
Friday
that.
Afternoon, yeah. And then I woke up Sunday afternoon, and my mom goes, you're up. And I'm like, why? Why are you saying that? Well, we were going to take you to the doctor if you didn't get up before dinner.
When I'm giving you 48 hours.
You have to be so careful with edibles, because even the weird thing with edibles, it just, even, you know, habitual users or chronic users that use, you know, an edible can affect them very differently. It's a weird thing. My wife and I had this not too long ago. We got some edibles. Now it's legal. And she got some CBD ones. And my daughter had practice and stuff. She's like, here, take one of these. I'm like, no, we got practice. I got to try. She's like, it's a 5 milligram CBD. It's nothing. And I took it and I completely forgot. Like, I honestly didn't feel anything. Like, I had my coffee and then we're driving back from practice. And my wife keeps like grabbing the wheel and she's like, slow down. What are you doing? Look it up in that car. And I was like, what is your problem? I'm like, quit touching me. You're going to cause an accident. And I totally forgot that we took it. I like, honestly didn't feel anything. And then she was like, are you not fucked up from that edible? I'm like, I totally forgot we even took it. And I'm like, wow.
Were you at practice at this time when she was grabbing you? Were you going, hey, fuck, are you as fucked up as me?
No, it didn't happen to me this time.
No.
You have to be very careful with it. No, I mean, we talked about this numerous times.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about this numerous times on the air. People are very, very, very different in how it reacts, right?
Yeah.
Like the way I am impacted by it can be completely different, right, than somebody else. Yep. And everybody's like, oh, you take this one and it'll make you sleepy. Somebody takes that one and they want to run around the block, right?
Yeah. Well, it's the Wild West, right? Because we've been lied to for so fucking long. Everybody's still trying to figure out dosages. You know,
yeah.
It's like when Prohibition ended, I'm sure they all just went like this with pints and pints and pints of as much liquor as they could. So it's sort of the same thing. But I go back to, like, you know, when you watch The Culture High and you watch The Union and you see Adam and his team through both of those documentaries, when you put together the litany of dangerous lies that were told to us by Big Pharma, through the government, through lobbyists, and then the relief, because you touched on it, the relief that people didn't get during that time, now that they are getting, when they did have cancer or they were suffering fucking tremendously and they couldn't eat and they couldn't sleep and there was nothing natural that they could take and they just got filled with pharmaceuticals to the point where they were non-fucking functional. And I think I go back to that, and I think it's not just a crying shame, it's like a criminal part of our history.
It's really sad when you see that part and then you see where, you know, and that's where I think, you know, as much as our films helped, I think the part in both films that we were able to really connect with people, because even the most staunch proponents or opponents of cannabis getting legalized or regulated couldn't argue when we were talking about people's health and people dealing with pain. They, right. You know, the same people that advocate for their rights are like, well, how can I determine the rights of that person when the person's like, I've gone through all the treatments and the opioids don't work and this doesn't work and I don't want to take something that's super addictive and could kill me with an overdose. I'd much rather, like, cannabis works for me. How can you argue someone, even if it is just anecdotal and it just makes them feel better, when you have chronic illness or chronic pain and something just makes you feel better, like, why would you take that away from somebody, right? That could
relief.
Be the difference of them surviving or dying. And that's where even the starchest opponents in both films, when we show, you know, when we show Jaden in The Culture High and we show Greg Cooper, who has really bad MS in The Union, that they were like, yeah, I just can't agree with that point, but I don't agree with all your other points. Like, it's those things and people being accessed. We kind of talked about that in Culture. People having access to video and able to share these stories online and them going viral, I think was what really tipped the scales, because then other people that started having kids with autism or severe epilepsy and things like that, when they were at wit's end and were, you know, just like do anything to see their kid not suffer, they were like, well, let's try it. And when they even get a little bit of results, how are you going to deny any parent from helping their kid? Right.
Yeah. You know what I find interesting too on the kids side of things, Adam, is the conversation now about when you should start smoking on a regular basis. And even the most regular users that I know go, I don't want my kid doing this. I want them to grow up till they're 25, you know what I mean? Or at least till they're 21 before they start smoking on a regular basis. So there's been that, and I grew up a bit differently than maybe you two did. It wasn't evil in my life. Like, it wasn't something that was presented as
clearly not, because your mom left a pound of fucking brownies on the counter for you to eat when you were 13.
Yeah.
Wait till you hear the story about the PCP cake.
PCP so, cake.
Yeah, you're from the Keys originally, there, aren't you?
Long I had hippie friends. There was no PCP.
Yeah,
I may have ate a box of Gravol. That's what he's talking about.
Well, that'll make you see some crazy shit.
Oh, dude, I was trying to explain it. They're all laughing at me. Oh, so you're six and you took a whole box of Gravol. Great story. But no, I was fucked up. I was twisted. So anyway, and I remember it. I have a vivid memory of being whacked out on Gravol because I ate like 10 of them from the box when I was whining. Oh. My mom just threw them into the back of the car. And said, shut up. So anyway, I grew up in a situation
as
where
most
it wasn't
great parents do when their kids are annoying. They throw drugs at them to take.
That's I'm a proponent of drugging your children, especially when you're traveling.
Anyway,
sorry, do not sell that short. If you're on a plane with a kid under the age of three, drug the shit out of them. Yeah. You're doing yourself and everybody else a favor. So anyway, it wasn't a bad. It wasn't a bad thing that when we grew up, right? Like, my stepdad smoked every day. And so I have a very different perspective of it. If anything, I was living in a world where they were warning us about alcohol, which is probably why I became a raging drunk. Right.
Well, that's a rarity, right? Because most families, that would always be the hypocrisy. Even for us, when we were making the films, you start just looking at the way labels of drugs and stuff are. Because I grew up, like, my dad owned nightclubs. I was working Kocheck when I was 16. I was working the door when I was 18. I was bartending when I was 19. In BC, liquor laws were 19. So I couldn't work in the red zone until then. But, you know, it was like, oh, you shouldn't do that. But here, we'll give you shooters, you know, which causes like alcohol causes more domestic violence than like any other drug, hands down. It is the most destructive thing in families. Talk to even families with functional alcoholics. Right. That's something that's still shifting. I have family members that are in recovery, and alcohol seems to be the one that we still accept because it's a socially acceptable thing that it's okay. And with a functioning alcoholic, is there's a lot of them that really aren't functioning, but because they're not carrying a brown paper
take that back
with a bottle, like you see
Lock's the only one. But dude, Lock's the only one. Yeah. Sorry, not functioning. Brown bag, go ahead. Didn't mean
brown
to
bag.
Cut you off.
But you know, just our perception, when you think of an alcoholic, you think of like what you see in the movies. Like normally it's either someone beating their kids or like carrying a brown paper bag but what can also happen, and this is where I was moved. I went to one of my friends for his 10-year cake, and there was he was the Surgeon General of the Okanagan was up there, and he talked about how his family came to approach him to say, "Dad, you have a problem." And he literally, like, he justifies most of us. He's like, "I just did a triple bypass heart surgery on like a child. I saved people's lives. I don't have a drinking problem." But his own children are like, "That's great, and you're super successful in business. But when was the last time you came to one of our sports games? When was the last time you sat down and had a deep conversation with us or threw the ball?" Right. Mm-hmm. You know, he would come home and he would drink himself, not to any kind of violent stupor, wouldn't beat anybody, would just, you know, would be negligent of his family. He would work really hard. Then he'd come and drink and go to bed and get up early and start all over again. And that negligence can be just as destructive to a family as actual physical beating and stuff like that. And it's a common thing with alcoholics that we look at. They're like, "Well, they didn't crash their car. They didn't do anything like this." I'm like, okay, but how about just starting fights at your Christmas family dinner, right? And then you guys don't talk to each other for 4 years.
Okay, I've only done that a couple of times.
Well, as long as it was in good fun, Locke, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, as long as you meant it. As long as
who
wanted to do it.
Who hasn't fought the uncle that stole the toilet paper?
Right? Yeah, that's a legit fight. That's a legit fight.
Yeah. You bring up a great point, and I have a plethora of experience with alcohol, and had to had to fucking go whoa about 4 years ago because I was so fucked. Like, I was just literally fucked. I was fucked because I would get up in the morning and feel like shit because I drank too much. And then the only thing that would make me feel better is having another drink, and then pretty soon you're emotionally not available and you're doing one of these when you're eating. I never got to the shake point. I just drank too much. And so because I drank too much, I was fucking completely unavailable to everybody. You know,
yeah.
I never got into a domestic dispute. I never got violent. But I certainly started arguments and conversations just based on the fact that I was fucking shit faced. It was kind of what I did.
Take that back, Dean. Stop it. Yeah. I never heard about you starting any shit.
Makes you wonder if I was hosed at work, doesn't it? I never stopped to consider, and it was after I watched your documentary, and it was years after it came out, and I started like trying to figure out, can I get some replacement therapy for this? Because I don't think I can just stop doing everything. Like, I was just, I'm being fucking serious. You want the truth?
Hey, I'm going to quit. I'm going to need another vice.
But the way I looked at it after the fact, I was like, oh my God, this is actually good for you.
Yeah.
Your body has cannabinoid cell in its cellular system. It's attached to your DNA and your structure. And the more of it I can get into me and the more strains I can get, the less stressed out I have to be about not living a lifestyle of actually going out and doing something fun. You know what I mean? Does that sound weird?
No, it doesn't sound weird at all.
Locke's killing himself laughing, so it sounds.
Is it a term? Is that an actual fucking term, though? Replacement therapy?
Well, oh, sure, absolutely it is.
Okay, I don't know about that, but here
it is now.
But all jokes aside, though, you know what a lot of people replace it with, not knowing it's therapy, is they eat themselves in our culture to bad ends, right? So a lot of people are like, okay, I don't do any drugs, but I was like, but then they eat like shit and they binge eat and they overeat and they don't exercise. Like, it's really interesting when you start going down the path and you talk to all these addiction specialists and you start looking at, you know, how all of it, and that's where, you know, not getting too far down the rabbit hole of the drug docs we did, is that prohibition has been a colossal failure because addiction all stems from mental illness and you're trying to self-medicate at some point, right? It doesn't, and we say mental illness, everybody thinks it's got to be some crazy story like you are molested or you're abused. You can just have social anxieties or insecurities that can cause you to, when you come into contact with a certain drug, it becomes your crutch. And the perfect example when we learned about this was talking to doctors, and you look at one of the most addictive substances in the world, opioids, right? And some people, they go for a surgery and never did drugs in their whole life, but they get a surgery and they get introduced to opioids and then they're hooked for years, right?
You know what the numbers are? What? 1 in 4 have a potential, and not everyone, eats opioid their addiction? Mortgage. It's 1 in 4 have the potential of a severe addiction. And again, it's all relative.
Right.
Not every one of those one ends up, you know, remortgaging their house and ruining their lives or whatever. Right. But there's that number. It's 25%.
It's really high. And then you can have somebody else, like, for instance, me, like, for whatever reason, opioids don't connect. Like, every time I have my jaw broken and I've had things where I've had to take opioid. And I usually, when they say, oh, use these for the next 2 weeks, I use it for the first day of the surgery. And then I muscle it out with, like,
I'm the same way.
Tylenol or whatever. Like, I don't like them. They make me feel real groggy and I don't sleep right. And, like, I don't like them. Thankfully,
I get sick, violently ill from them.
Like, emotionally.
But you get bunged up too, right?
The shit thing. Yeah.
And I can take, like, there's certain things I can handle. Extreme pain I can handle. I just can. I am fortunate. I've broken my back. I've broken my ankle a million times, different bones, and I haven't noticed. So maybe it's the thing with me, but what I can't handle, what I cannot, I've had dental surgery where I've just taken Tylenol after this.
Yeah.
I can't handle not going to the bathroom. I have to be able to poop. Not pooping is like, I panic, like sheer panic sets in when anytime I'm like, I think it's been like 7 hours. I haven't taken a dump. So that part of it scares me away. But what people don't understand is that we've come so far, even just since the documentary, even since we've had the legalization of the product, we've come so far that that cannabis actually can replace your opioid therapy.
Yeah.
Like it literally can. That's why they call it replacement therapy.
You saw that in a lot of states where
you're really trying to make this stick, eh?
Yeah.
Replacement therapy.
Replacement therapy. Put it out in the ether enough and it'll stick, eh?
Replacement therapy. Yeah. No, but they have. They've replaced opioids with like super high concentrated cannabis. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a smart thing. Yeah.
Well, and just how destructive opioids are. I mean, that's, you know, even now you're seeing trickles of not too much. It's been covered in the media too well because COVID's scaring everything. But COVID, the opioid deaths in Alberta and BC have almost surpassed COVID. They're pretty close. Like
I think they are in BC.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, they're higher.
Didn't they just set a record in BC for
every year
the month of February for the month of February for opioid deaths?
Yeah.
Oh, it did.
We're way up here too. Yeah.
What's that number?
BC,
but Alberta's at its all-time high.
What's that number?
Oh, it's last
over it in Alberta. It's over 1,000 up to like November, December, or January.
Yeah.
It's where normally it's around 400 to 500. It's doubled.
Why was it? Why is 1,800 ringing a bell for me for the year for last year?
I think that's BC.
Okay. Yeah. We saw the numbers not long ago and had a conversation on air about it because there is a lot of conversation right now about, okay, you're locking everybody down for the sake of COVID, which, and I'm not saying I'm against it. I'm saying, I'm saying this is the argument on the other side of the fence, but how much impact is this having on our mental health as a society and how many people are we losing because of addiction issues? And is it fair? Why are we ignoring that when we're so hyper-focused on COVID?
There's no argument there, Locke, that we're putting so much emphasis on one thing that there's a lot of stuff. Like I have a few friends that are police officers here in Edmonton. They're like, Adam, the domestic disputes and violence is off the chain. They're like, we could go through 10 calls a week right now. So, you know, even a few doctors I've debated with this, I'm like, hey, look, I get it. It's a public health crisis, but how many other health things are we just pushing to the wayside to only focus on one right now that we're not seeing the bigger picture?
We're making a lot of mistakes. I think they know that though.
Tons.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? It came out in this trial that's going on out here. They're looking into how the government has been dealing with the COVID-19 response. Especially when our long-term care homes. So that's part of that. What has come out is if because we're so fucking behind the times, behind in vaccines and the variants are out, they've said, listen, if you've got a child and he tests positive, they need to seriously get inside a room and stay there by themselves for 14 fucking days, 14 days. And this kind of broke last week and I had people emailing me and I had people tweeting me, Dean, can you say something about this? This is wrong. Our kid shouldn't be trapped in his room for 14 days. And what I would say to them is the same thing I'd say to everybody. Use some fucking common sense.
Yeah.
If you got two parents, someone go in the room with them, or, you know, mandate the basement to be part of it. Like people. And the other part of this is people are so scared and stupid that they will literally follow these things to a T if they're told to, and they don't realize now. And I attribute these opioid deaths and the skyrocketing number in opioid deaths in Canada to that very thing, which is, you know, this has obviously hurt our mental health as a country.
Mm-hmm.
This has made people depressed. It's made people anxious. It's made people alone that were alone before. They're more alone than
they've
ever
been.
Losing
jobs too, right?
Losing jobs, losing family, drinking more, taking more. I mean, this is coping mechanism 101, the time that we're in, right? Am I not mistaken? So it's got to have something to do with it.
100%.
Yeah, my drinking has totally gone up, right? I mean, and I'm living a fairly normal life. So, and I'm not an anxious person at all. I've got lots of mental issues.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah, we can get into it, but I just found myself, all right, well, I guess night's over. Let's go down to the basement, watch some hockey and drink some more beer. But
yeah,
that's how everybody is though. That's how we all have been because like the option of us going out and getting sick isn't there. Well, I'm going to go chance it and go out and hang out with my friends. No, if you're responsible, you haven't been. So what has that done to us? It's a fucking weird deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, what's interesting though, is there's a, there's a guy, and I know his handle sounds dumb, but there's this one doctor I listen to that's now a YouTube guy called ZDogMD, and he's had a whole bunch of specialists on and people talking about the lockdowns and some really fascinating points that for me as a layman, that we, what keeps happening with all of this is that even journalists, and this is where they give the and Locke, you and I have talked about this before, the negative side about the media, and it's this big overlord, but you have young people working or regular people in media that it's all about being first nowadays, not about being right. So when they get information, medical information that they don't know how to articulate correctly, they kind of get the Cole's notes, be like this variant, this much, boom, they publish it. Right. And then, you know, of course, 2 weeks later, it should have been retracted or there's some major errors, right? That this site that I listen to, he just goes through the data really well and explains some things really, really well. But it's interesting hearing a lot of virologists saying that the negative impacts from the lockdowns, you know, we're only just starting to see what happened from those. And you're starting to hear like this, like domestic violence, the other things that we've been so fixated. It's interesting perspective to hear it from other people that I've opened my eyes just like, wow, I guess, because I'm still trying to just work, maintain, do what I can and follow all the guidelines I can. But it's crazy, to your point, to see where some people have followed. Even when you really read the guidelines, you're kind of like, what? This one contradicts itself. Number two contradicts number three. How can you follow?
They've done a lot of that.
Right?
Like in Alberta, Dean, I don't know if we talked about this on Tuesday, but they did a phase 1.5, they're calling it, not a phase 2 reopening. So they're telling gyms you can open, but you can't have strenuous workouts.
Hey, that's supposed to like that's where you almost think you're in a Saturday Night Live like skit, because you're like, are they just being goofy? Did they just hire some kid to be like, go to the gym, but you can't work out strenuously? And then what?
If you see anybody over 50% effort, you need to stop them, Jimmy. Stop them from strenuously exercising.
Exactly. Like what the fuck?
But then, it's like okay, they can lift heavy weights, but they can't run on the treadmill because one is considered more strenuous than the other.
But who's Adam? Who's going to follow all those rules?
The strenuous police.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing is I've had a few friends too. And the interesting thing that when you learn about language, so my office is now above a law firm. And a lot of the times when they put out rules, it isn't even what they meant for them to be inferred to. They're like, well, no, that's not how we meant that law to be written. They're like, but that is how it's written. So you can't like, and they get frustrated. And then you see government officials wanting to make an example out of you because you followed the law to the letter better than they understand it. And then that's where you see this manipulation of it happen, right? Where you're like, no, your job is public health. Your job isn't to get mad at me because I understand language better than you or that how this is written. You don't try to get me for some other infraction because I proved you wrong, right? Or that I'm standing my ground or holding my rights and not getting anybody sick. It's a very interesting thing here. I heard this on another podcast. It's about the ability to flex dominance on others, right? Where mask, you idiot, you're killing my grandmother, idiot. It's like, whoa, I'm not doing anything. I'm following all the guidelines to the way they're written. I'm not killing anyone.
Yeah.
I do wear a mask. I do all those things. But it's an interesting, and social media's, of course, heighten this to a way that we could have never expected, right? We're really...
I love when people give us all that information in like a cartoon meme. And the source is like at Jenny Rainbow 55.
I know.
And everybody goes, wow, it's got to be true. At Jenny Rainbow 55.
I had one of these with my family member and they're like, it's right on the FDA website. I'm like, where? I'm on the FDA website. I don't see it. They're like, here's the link. And then if I punched in the link manually, I'm like, that doesn't go to the FDA website where you're going, right? Like, you have to be very careful. Like as docs, I have a little bit of experience with this because, you know, we don't have it so much with bio docs. Like there you follow the history and you interview the people. But when we did it on cannabis, like you have to have report after report that goes to, and the best thing is to always go to medical studies, not any kind of, now like you used to go by the New York Times, everything's a gold standard, but now you go to medical studies because they're, you know, a lot of times you just have doctors and
they're scientists. Definitive. Yeah.
And they're nerds.
That's Dean does a lot, because I hear
that's
him.
That's all I do. That's all I do. I do Journal of American Medicine. I do Johns Hopkins University. For 4 years, I wouldn't touch the CDC website because Trumpy had his hands in there. Yeah. But now I'm back on the CDC website. I find that if you're going to educate yourself, and I said this to someone the other day, you know, misinformation being one of the biggest issues that we suffer from today and the way people take it. You know, like you talk about your rights and being able to interpret the language of a law better than, you know, a health professional. People weaponize that. People then take that ability and they weaponize it for their own narrative, right? Which is really the problem that we have, is they'll take that information, weaponize it, and say, well, the language is wrong, so fuck you, these are my rights.
Yeah.
But what I've really found specifically over the last couple of years is that the only way that you can actually have a conversation with anybody that doesn't believe in fact is to shut up and listen. Because you're never going to convince them. I'm not gonna bring up all my source articles from the Journal of American Medicine in the middle of some guy's garage at a party. No. So that's not gonna happen. But what I found is I find that I respect even my friends, like my friends that I've known for 20, 30 years. I've had guys I went to grade school with send me hate mail. I've had guys that I went to high school with. No word of a lie. Corey Kingwell is the dude's name. I went to grade school with him in Rosetown, Saskatchewan. He sent me this thing about the Proud Boys just being good Canadian guys. And I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. And then my buddy Garth Murdoch, who I grew up with, went to private Christian high school with, born again Christian high school with. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? Where did you learn your shit? This is bullshit. We're fucking stick to your education. And I'm like, oh my God, no one's evolved. That's why
I only get information from TMZ.
Yeah. Oh, well, you got the best one.
In Breitbart.
You're like Men in Black, the hot sheets. That's where it's real, though, right? It's like
I got a way of getting us into another topic here. You've been filming quite a bit, Adam, right?
I have.
Through COVID.
Yep.
And you've been filming in the States, right?
Correct. Yep.
And have you found that there is a decided difference between the two countries and how they're handling COVID from a business perspective? I mean, we can have a conversation about running into somebody in the grocery store that's having a fight with the guy behind the lettuce about not wearing a mask. But I mean, what about business wise?
Yeah, it was interesting. So my team just traveled recently with the recent laws. They just went down. They're in New Jersey doing some research right now. And now you have to get the negative test before you go, and the negative test when you arrive, and then when you come back. And, you know, I could go off on that too, where it's like, I kind of had this debate with the nurse the other day because my daughter had a close contact and we went and got the test. And then I'm like, okay, well, so when we're negative, we're negative. She's like, well, not really. You still have to isolate and you have to do it. I'm like, oh, so the test doesn't work for early detection then, is what you're saying. She's like, well, no, it does. I'm like, well, it clearly doesn't, because if it says she doesn't, like, I'm like,
it sucks being smarter than most people, doesn't it, Scorchy?
I was trying to figure it out because it's our first time having to do a close contact. And I'm like, no, well, clearly it doesn't, because why would she then have to isolate? And they're like, well, I'm like, listen, I just want to get the test and I want to go through, but that really doesn't make sense. But my team going to the States, when we went down for the Olympia, it's pretty straightforward. The States, we have to do a whole bunch of stuff anyway. We have to get pocket letters that show that we're a Canadian company employing Canadians, and then we're hiring a few Americans. That's usually what they're worried about most, right? Are you taking jobs away from Americans? So as long as we show that we're a Canadian company employing Canadians, we're coming down there just for the subject matter and spending money, they're fine. Then we have to get a carnet for all our gear to make sure that we're not trying to sell it there and make some kind of border transfer, that it whatever gear we're bringing in is coming back. So on the way there, when we went at Christmas time, was nothing. We went right in. They were like, oh, cool, you guys are going to the Olympia. I hope Phil Heath wins this year and blah, blah, blah. And like, they didn't care. We got tested like crazy down there because we were trying to follow. We all had to get COVID certified. That was part of our production. And to be around all the athletes, none of us would feel healthy. Like, we'd feel horrific if we got anybody sick and they had to pull out of the tournament. So, you know, we got tested before we went in, we got tested once we arrived, we got tested after 3 days again, we got tested when we switched states. Like, that's why you saw some of my posts, we were all making fun and getting tested constantly down there. And then we wore masks and did our thing. And, you know, but like Nashville and Florida was not, everything was like wide open, and it, like, people wore masks for the most part, but it was not, it was interesting to see, because you're almost like, is it even here? Because like, they don't talk about it down here, right? Like, it's like, we did always did our part and did as safe we could. And most people wore masks. And, you know, even when I was down there, I was like, well, their hospitals must be just like overflowing. And they were busy, but none of them were like, you know, panicking like they are here. Like it made you question a little bit. I've always been for the socialized healthcare.
Yeah.
But down there, you know, and again, I'm not getting to this because you can go on that forever, but they have way more hospital beds, right? So they were never really, like, a lot of places were, other than New York and stuff, when it hit, were really bursting at the seams. And interestingly enough, you know, just a dummy documentarian observation now, is that even places that have been wide open for a while, versus places that have been locked down. Like cases are just plateauing kind of everywhere right now, right? Yeah. Whether they've been open or closed. So a lot of virologists are kind of saying like, man, this thing was going to run its course regardless of how much we did, right? It's really hard to pinpoint how much was helped and how much wasn't, right? By doing lockdowns. But you know, we traveled to Florida, we came back, and then it was interesting coming back because we had the exemptions and everything. And they were like, you guys applied for exemptions and your paperwork, go ahead. And we're kind of want to ask like where we
So you didn't even get tested when you came back in?
We did. We all wanted to, right? Like we keep doing more to be just do our part because I wouldn't feel
Talking about common sense, Adam? Are you talking about common sense? You run your life and business as if you have common sense. Is that correct?
I try my best.
Okay,
just checking. My wife at times will probably say I don't have a lot of common sense, but sure, I try my best. So, but no, it was interesting coming back before this last time where, you know, we had all the paperwork and they said, go ahead. And they're like, we'd still like to get the test because we're about to be around our families. Then when we came home, of course, like I said to my wife, I'm like, hey, do you want me to go in the basement? Not. And she's like, Adam, it's Christmas. School's like, we're not going anywhere. Like as if the kids are going to just want you sitting in a basement, like girl brain. We'll all just sit home until you come back negative. And then I had my results pretty quick within 48 hours. They're like, you're negative. And then I went for another test 5 days and I was negative again. And then, you know, from there we just lived normally. Right. I figured two negative tests within 5 days was good enough to say I was negative.
Hey, so. did when you offered to stay in the basement and your wife declined, were you a little bit upset?
I was like, damn, I could have just watched Netflix and done my own
thing. Be honest.
But yeah, that wasn't going to go.
Be honest.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, you tell have me a about different this family than mine.
Yeah, me too. Tell me about your Bisping documentary because I know you've been talking about it and Adam Scorgi's our guest documentary maker, filmmaker. I'm very interested in it because I'm not a massive MMA fan. But I follow a couple of MMA guys and Mike Bisping's one of them. So tell me a little bit about the doc.
So Bisping is honestly one of the best guys I've worked with. Him and Grant, Dan, I know we've been fortunate to work with a lot of great guys, but Bisping and I really connected because we're the same age. He's like a year older than me. He's been with his wife, you know, ever since they were young, like I have. They have three kids. And Bisping was one of those guys, like when I first watched, and I'm an avid UFC fan, and I watched from the original Ultimate Fighter shows when he was on, I think, season two or season three. And I hated him. Me and my wife wanted to see him lose. We kept being like, kick that cocky Brit's ass, right? Like, but he knew he sold himself as the villain because whether you tuned in to hate him or whether you tuned in to support him, you were tuning in to watch him. You have an emotional connection. He was before Conor McGregor, before Chael Sonnen, before any of these guys, he was really the first guy that knew how to get you emotionally charged for a fight. And when you really go through all the injuries, Locke, you've seen it now that he went through, he is the real life Rocky story only.
Yeah.
What he accomplished as a champion to me makes him the greatest fighter
and
that's ever competed. Cause something else that,
and we did a lot of the injuries we knew about, but we didn't know about a lot of them, right?
Didn't know to the extent, right? Like a lot of people knew his eye was bad.
Yes.
But they didn't know to what, because he only released that in like seven, 8 months ago, he pulled out his glass eye on his podcast and everyone was like, what? We're like, Biz, you will save that for the film. He's like, I was getting into an argument with someone. And I was like, eh. And I showed him and like, but as you got from the film, Locke, the part that's really, is you just really see how personable and likable he is. Like everyone that watches like, man,
yes.
Like, how do you not like this guy? He's just a great guy. And like, even then, like every time I go to LA now, like I make a point when if he's in town, we're getting together for beers because he's just so fun to be around. He's charismatic.
Is he calling 259, Adam? Is he doing UFC 259 this weekend?
He's only doing the prelims though. Because he works for ESPN, okay. So I think he's doing the prelims, and then the pay-per-view will be Joe Rogan.
Now, I don't know, Dean, if you watch much, but he's really good. I mean, everyone talks about Rogan, and Rogan's awesome, and I don't want to take anything away from what Rogan brings to the table when he's doing the call, but I think Bisping is just as entertaining as any of them cast, and I look forward to seeing him on there.
He's becoming quickly one of the big fan favorites, man. Like he just, you know, being a fighter, he can, you know, he can weigh in so well about what guys are going through and the delicacies of how to correct somebody that's making some errors in there, but in a way as an athlete can respect that what he's not doing, he's a little gun shy. He's been there. And because Bisping had such a tumultuous like career with the injuries and overcoming, and everybody wrote him off that he would never win a title other than maybe his major family and his boxing coach, Jason Perillo. I mean, he was like a 12-1 underdog when he fought Luke Rockhold. Nobody thought and they were giving him that bad of odds without knowing that he was blind and had no depth perception, right? In one eye. Like they were writing him off completely. So I think when he commentates now, they just give him such a like everyone. And now that they're seeing him on his Facebook, I see it all the time on his Twitter. People are like, man, I hated you when you fought. And now you're like my most favorite guy to follow. Like he's just really fun, witty, makes fun of himself. And it was an honor to tell his story.
It's almost when he's doing the call, he's almost talking to the fighters, and they actually sometimes talk back to him because with the new, with no fans, they can hear each other. Like they're ringside. Yeah. Eh? And there's been a couple of times. It's like, I think he just fucking talked to Bisping or like, you know what I mean? It's interesting that dynamic. It was hard to watch at the beginning because you could hear the, you could hear it. And it was just like, that sounds awful. You get used to that. And you can move on. And now I'm sort of, I'm interested in it. Well, I mean, I had a tough time with UFC, especially the women. I don't know, man. Like I had a really hard time watching the women kick the shit out of each other. Yeah. Well, dude, it's a violent sport, man.
They're warriors, right? They almost fight harder, I find, the women to kind of prove that they still belong there. And not that they have to. I mean, they're incredible athletes and warriors. But, man, their fights, so many of them, even if you get, like, two relatively unheard-of fighters, like, they're action-packed in the way they go after each other. It's
Well, I think because it means something. Like, if, you know, I've watched several. I'm not an appointment guy. If there's a pay-per-view, if it's McGregor, I'll watch it. I've rented like maybe 6 or 7 pay-per-view UFC fights in my life. Yeah. So you can't want to get into this conversation this with you guys. Yeah.
Oh yeah. This is a good card. Oh yeah. It's
3 title fights and Hassan. Yeah. It'll be a good one. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I love stories because like what people don't realize is that this league, when you come into UFC and you get a fight, it doesn't pay huge. I mean, there's a scale when it comes to winners and losers and who gets paid what. Like it's fight and fight for your life, fight for your food, fight for your next fight. And a lot of these guys come out of nowhere. A lot of these guys are stories of, you know, backyard brawlers or guys that wanted second careers or, you know, whatever the situation is.
Bisping is essentially like that. He came from a northern town in UK called Clitheroe, which is it's a quaint little town, but not a lot of opportunities. So young men, they get into a lot of trouble, right? They work hard during the week and then they go and get in fist fights during the weekend and, you know, hopefully don't get thrown in jail. And Bisping was one of those guys. And he said, like, I was never a great athlete. Like when I played football or soccer for us, he's like, I was always last picked. I had 2 left feet. I wasn't a super talented athlete. And even once he's like, but he could fight from a very young age. He was fighting older guys. He caught onto jiu-jitsu really well. Kickboxing did really well for him. And he just kept building up there. And then in his career, every time, right, as he says in the dog, typical Bisping fashion, he'd be a number one contender and he'd lose. And he'd not only lose, he'd lose in spectacular fashion.
Badly.
Henderson, one of the greatest knockouts. Vitor Belfort head kicked him, which is, you know, caused the eye damage and ultimately made him lose complete vision in that eye. And the part that we pulled back a little bit on the film because Bisping never wanted it to seem like he was complaining or using it as an excuse. But every time he was beat in that number one contender position, he was beat by a guy that tested positive for testosterone, right? Dan Henderson with Vitor tested higher than anyone ever in UFC history, more than Brock Lesnar when he kicked his eye. Like that was where. So Bisping.
Yeah. It's a lot of hormones.
Oh, he's been starch against performance-enhancing drugs. And Bisping put it really good. It didn't make the film, but he talked about it. And he's like, oh, and those people that say it was a boner pill or this or that, and they made a mistake. He's like, bullshit. because he's like, I'm no angel and I did my fair share of partying and I never failed one fucking piss test. So he's like, you know, when you're fighting in the UFC and they're coming for you and they're testing. So when you get tested and you're a little over on test and they find this particle, he's like, and you, he's like, to me, that's bullshit, right? That you were playing around and they, because they kept getting more and more sophisticated. One thing I'll say now, the UFC has stricter testing than like any other sport out there. They are tested way harder than NHL. NHL's drug testing is quasi joke, right?
Like, I don't think they really have drug testing. Joke. They're just they like check in with guys and go, "Hey, you good?"
That's Like, are you maybe good? You may be a little too good. We might have to get you some help here, or what's going on?
NBA too. NBA doesn't test for shit. NBA and NHL and Major League Baseball now, they're like, you know, we'll test for hormones from time to time.
In sports where you don't do damage to your opponent, I hear the argument, and when you kind of see Icarus and you hear how much this has been around forever, I'm kind of like, why don't you guys just all cheat to see the best that we can push human ability, right? The only
Much better would the hockey be if everyone was on the juice?
Yeah.
Probably incredible.
Well, and the big thing that happens with the juice, the big misunderstanding that I've learned from my little bit of interviewing some of these guys is that the biggest thing it allows these top level athletes to do is heal. Right. That's the biggest thing is that they're pushing their body so hard. It allows them to heal faster than their opponents, like because they're all training hard. Like nowadays, there's no high level athlete that isn't training like a monster. I mean, my daughter's in competitive hockey here at 14 at just double A, triple A level. She trains 5-6 days a week. Right. Willingly loves to do.
You know, I don't know if you guys have seen the Blue Jays backup catcher, Alejandro Kirk. Have you guys seen him? That guy's a professional athlete, and I can guarantee you he's not knocking himself.
Well, baseball, baseball is one of those ones, and that's where and that's where baseball is one of those things too, where like I honestly, when they were like worried about them doping, I'm like, it's a bat that hits a ball. Like you still have to have great hand-eye coordination. I could go take all
let them take Adderall
in the world. I'm still never gonna be able to hit a ball.
speaking of athletes. You guys are both in Edmonton.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to get your thoughts on the last three game set against the Leafs. I'm in Toronto. You guys are in Edmonton. Just a few numbers to throw at you, if that's okay.
Number 13 for you. Fuck off.
No, that's not a number. That's an insult. You just insulted me. That's absolutely not a number. 13-1. That's goals for the Toronto Maple Leafs against the Edmonton Oilers. Game one was four nothing. I'm not done. Game one is 4-0. Game two, 3-0. Game three, 6-1. And Locke and I talked before the game yesterday, and I'm like, "What do you think tonight? I think it's going to be 6-3." And he's like, "I think it's going to be 6-3 the other way. The Oilers are going to." And it was again a blowout. And prior to this series, and I know you guys are big Oiler fans, and if you haven't watched the making of Coco, the Grant Fuhr story, which Adam made, the documentary is fucking fantastic. We'll get into it in a second. But I wanted to talk about this because it'll make you guys feel
Ice
bad.
Guardians, too.
Ice Guardians as well, yeah, and the Bob Probert story. Phenomenal. Like I said, he's royalty. He's documentary royalty.
I don't know.
But it wasn't even... It wasn't even a series. It wasn't even fun to watch. It was fun to watch for me, but in a three-game statement series, this was supposed to be a statement series for you guys, by the way.
Yeah.
Leaf wins with three goalies, Campbell, Hutchinson, Anderson. Outscored the Oilers 13-1. McDavid, no points in three straight. Draisaitl, he had 1 point in 9 periods. No Matthews for the first two games. All four lines scored.
What it exposed?
What happened?
What I had been saying is like a diehard fan. I've been watching for, and again, I'm not an analyst or an expert, but with all the hype, even when Oilers were doing good, I'm like, guys, we still have horrible defense. The team is not whole. This isn't a playoff contending team. It relies on two superstars way too much, right? In order to win, like, I mean, if you look at Pittsburgh that won those cups, okay, you had Crosby and Malkin, but you also had like Gonchar and wicked defensemen and a great goaltender and like. Yeah. You know, we have two, the Oilers have two average goaltenders. We don't have one rock star defenseman. We have a couple offensive defensemen, but we don't have like a Lidstrom or Drew Doughty or any of those cup winning defensemen on the back. And they rely on two players way too much. As much as we're always like, Leon McDavid, I'm like, man, teams that win now have fourth lines that score. And you saw that with, like, even with the injuries Toronto has, it was like they were playing an amateur team. Embarrassing as was they. It was like they were playing an AHL team. It was embarrassing that
Oilers couldn't get through the neutral zone for three games.
I watched again like first period of both, and I was like, "This is so boring to watch."
It wasn't a trap either. It wasn't a traditional trap, right?
No,
like they weren't locking it up like New Jersey did for years.
No, they just stacked four guys up at the blue line, and that would be it. I mean, you get the puck in, and guys, you know what fucking amazed me yesterday too? I don't know if you saw that race to the puck between Ilya Mikheyev and Connor McDavid. That said something to me, and I don't want to read into it, but I'm pretty sure McDavid wants out.
No.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong.
Is that creeping into the narrative there about McDavid?
I just think as a human it would. I mean, you have to, like, McDavid's the nicest young gentleman you'll meet. I've been fortunate enough to meet him a couple times. I helped on his documentary, Whatever It Takes. I was consultant on that. And you want to be that diehard guy for your team and all, but like it's, I don't know how it can't creep in when you're like, I don't know what more I can do if the team constantly, if they don't make a big push this year, I don't know how his management, because your time as a top level athlete is so fine, right? Especially in today's NHL, it moves so quick. You're a 30 goal scorer 1 year, and 2 years later, you're getting six. Yeah. The game is so fast now.
The one thing
so good, like, mm-hmm. You start
the one thing about this team is I think you have to also be fair to the Leafs in that they're playing really, really well now, and they're a fast, aggressive team. And I think the Oilers are still a decent team, even with the pieces that they need. The young defense, goalie, the goaltending is questionable. But I still think Draisaitl and McDavid will drag them into the playoffs. I'm not sure they'll have much life. Right,
dude, almost everybody's making the playoffs. I mean, you have to be real shit to not make the playoffs in the pandemic era. But that's not even the point. Like, I watched McDavid post game yesterday. Yeah, just log out and log back in. I watched McDavid post game yesterday, and the disinterest in answering any questions. I thought he matured, actually. I was watching him in the post game. I was like, my God, this guy fucking, he gets it. Like, he's fed up. He's been through 5 years of garbage. You know, they just came off a great run before this three game set. It was prove it or lose it for the Oilers, the Leafs. I mean, you know, they're 10, 12 points up, on Edmonton after that. And all I could think of when I was watching the series as McDavid got more frustrated was, he's got to be looking across the ice at this team that is the best in the NHL by a country mile, having fun with guys like Thornton and Spezza and Matthews and Marner. He's got to be looking across the ice going, how much longer can I do this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least I think he does.
No, there is a conversation in town about it. I'm sure there is. Yeah, and I think Cates is well, I think it's definitely a concern. I think if you're a member of the management of the Edmonton Oilers, you got to be worried about at some point a conversation where they're like, "All right, this has got to change, or my boy's heading out." Right?
Yeah, I would think it does. I would think it matters. Like, this, you know, depending on what happens from now to the end, and I would feel terrible for the city of Edmonton growing up an Oilers fan. I really would. But I couldn't get it out of my mind. And then, did you guys see Draisaitl post game? Did you guys see this? I want to play this for you. This is, dude, this is great. I was so happy to see this clip because I thought, good, Edmonton has asshole sports guys like we do in Toronto. This is incredible.
Speaking of not good enough, your top players didn't produce much of anything in this series. Does it add to the frustration that you guys really didn't hold up your end of the bargain?
No, we love that. We love going without a point in 3 days, for sure. It's great.
We love that, he says. We love going three games straight without a point.
How do you answer those questions anymore, right?
I know. Like, dude's down.
That's what he's
and he's just,
he's
like,
pissed.
I'm shocked. Did you not play that on the radio this morning? I would have played the shit out of that all day. Oh, did we lose?
I think we lost there? Adam.
Scored you now. Yeah. He's like 5 feet wide, too. Look at that shot. That's hot. Are you there? We got you.
Dean, I gotta. I have to go. My connection is so bad right now.
All right,
and I keep losing you.
All my sound. I don't know if you guys can hear me. I can't hear anything now.
Yeah. Can you hear us? Can you hear us now? You got us?
I think it's a timing issue. We're at a weird time in Edmonton or something, or everybody's online. Okay, I hate to do this, but I haven't been able to keep up with the last 5-6 minutes. Oh, okay, there.
No worries.
Are you there?
Are you there? You got me now?
I am here. Yeah, I am here.
Yeah.
I think no. Yeah. He's having connection issues as well.
No problem. We can just end the podcast. That's the great part about doing this. I'm glad we got the Oilers stuff in.
You know what? Yeah. No, we needed to get the Oilers stuff in there. It to be fair, the Leafs played well. Edmonton is in shock right now. Not because anybody's surprised that the Leafs won, but how it happened. I think that's part of the issue, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's moving forward. I think that's going to be the discussion now. It's just like, okay, we got beat badly. Like, we got exposed huge. And other teams are going to pay attention to that, right?
Yeah. And I guess, too, you think about what was on the line going into that series. And that would frustrate the shit out of a fan base that, you know, was in second place prior to that series. You know, and you still got the two best players in the world, the best high scoring duo in the world on your team. It would just be like one of those really shitty wake up calls, sort of like realizing one of your parents has like a massive drug addiction, you know, like, oh, I'm never going to get out of this.
Thank you for that analogy.
Yeah, you're welcome. Sorry, I just wanted to add that in there. Anyway, we're having technical issues, so what we're going to do is go ahead, Adam. What
were you think you can hear me back now. I got to actually bounce, gentlemen. Unfortunately, I got to leave. I got to pick up the boys. Get out of school early today, so I'm on daddy duty. But thank you guys very much for having me on. I enjoy. We'll have to jump on again when I have more time. We can wrap for a couple hours.
Yeah, I'd like that. It was great. Great to talk to you.
That was awesome, Adam.
Bisping, the documentary, go look for it. It is really, really good, as are all of his other documentaries. Adam Scorgi, documentary filmmaker. Where can we find you on Twitter, or where would you want people to find you if not Twitter?
Twitter's good, or Instagram. Either or. On Instagram, it's just Scorg, like S-C-O-R-G. And then on Twitter, it's Adam Scorgi. Both of them, I'm pretty responsive on there. I'm pretty good at getting back. Those are kind of my ways to get in touch with me. Feel free. And yeah, Bisping's is exclusive. It's only available. Canadians get it before anybody else. It hasn't released worldwide yet. There's a big announcement coming there that unfortunately I'd love to share in the show, but I cannot. Similar to what happened in the past there.
Super Long, Channel.
Wink. No, but in Canada right now, it's available exclusively on Super Channel. So. Yep. For those of you, and then you can get those that don't have Super Channel through Apple TV or Amazon. You can get the month free thing. I highly recommend it, even if you're not a UFC fan. If you're a fan of the Rocky movies and, you know, the real Rocky story where a guy overcoming all adversity to do what's better for his family and really try to provide a better life for them, Bisping's story is that. If you do not,
you'll like it, Dean.
Fall in love with Bisping after the doc, then I question whether you're human.
I'm excited. I just love the personality. That's why I follow him. But you'll
love the doc even more, and the people. Like, that was the thing, is even some of his biggest opponents, like Rockhold and him, they all agreed to do it, because as much as they might have hated each other in the ring, there is a definite mutual admiration as a fighter and as athlete when you go against these guys. And I don't know if you were following his Instagram the other day, where him and Rockhold are in the gym again, and they're just like, come on, brother, let's hug it out, right? Like, there's definitely a neat respect with fighters that they respect each other. But yeah, please go to Super Channel and tune in. And Locke, I really appreciate you always like supporting my work and my team. It means a lot for indie guys like me. That stuff goes a long way. And thank you very much for having me on today, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Great to have you. Adam Scorgi, filmmaker, Adam. Documentary maker, Adam Scorgi, ladies and gentlemen, at Lachlan Cross as well, from 95.7 Cruise FM in Edmonton. Sorry about your technical issues. Maybe hardwire that shit next time.
Yeah, I'll try to figure that out. Do I have to drill anything?
Everybody, no. Maybe it's everybody crying about your Oilers on social media right now. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's what's up.
All right, my friend.
That narrative in Edmonton, I know we got to go. That narrative in Edmonton's got to be fun this morning. It's nice to not be on the other end of that. It's like constant fucking negativity. Sorry.
It is. Well, you guys have had your in Toronto, 1967.
Yeah. Whatever. I hate those people. Thanks for doing this, dude. Good to see you.
That was a lot of fun, my friend. All right.
We'll talk to you soon. Ladies and gentlemen, Lachlan Cross from 95.7 Cruise FM in Edmonton. Great morning show. As I scratch my nose, well, there's only a few people watching now, so thanks for watching. Thanks for being part of the program. Thanks to Adam Scorgi for joining us. Bisping, the name of the documentary, Apple TV Super Channel in Canada. Make sure you get it. I'll be watching it shortly. Thanks to our friends at Blue Microphones, part of the Blue Network, the DeanBlundell.com network. The official microphone of DeanBlundell.com is Blue Microphones. I use the NEX, the headphones as well. You could do the same thing. Go to Blue Microphones and figure it out for yourself, especially if you're doing anything like this. Everybody needs a microphone. All of my kids have microphones, for crying out loud. Blue Microphones. Thanks. BlueMicrophones.com. Thanks to our friends at Ed's Fine Imports. His Gitch, the best underwear you'll ever wear. Super comfortable boxer briefs, pouch in the front, no piling, elastic. It's terrific. It's a hardy elastic too, which is good for people like moi. But get his Gitch for the price of 3. You can get 4 right now. Use promo code GITCH3. Go to edsfineimports.com. Gitch and then the number 3. Also, Domination. Dominate with content by going to domination.com, DMNTM.com. Our friend Adam made this software, and it is lights out. The best software you can get if you're producing content. You can do like 70 pieces in like, I don't know, 5 minutes. It's ridiculous. You can try it for free. Go to DeanBlundell.com. Click on the Domination logo at the top or go to DMNTN.com. Try it yourself today. Join our newsletter at DeanBlundell.com as well. Have a great day. Talk to you soon. Thanks for being a part of this. Bye.